It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Denali National Park is one of the most famous and popular places to visit in Alaska. But people who have been here for a while know that you don't have to go into the park to experience incredible Alaska range scenery, hiking, and even biking, canoeing, and river floating. The Denali Highway is the other Denali to the east of the park, and it is among the most spectacular and inviting places accessible to the road system in Alaska. On today's show, we're learning about how to get there, what you can do, the archaeology, boating, and biking on this remote highway that connects Cantwell and Paxson, and really has no other purpose than to bring Alaskans to the wilderness. And to begin the show, we're going to be talking to some folks from who are in Glen Allen with the Bureau of Land Management, which is the agency that manages most of the land out there. With me first is Denton Hamby. He's an outdoor recreation planner with the BLM in Glen Allen. Thanks for being with us, Denton.
You bet.
So I think you're a really lucky guy if you spend a lot of time out there, because it is just so spectacular. And every time I've driven the highway, I just get this feeling like I've got to stop the car and run out across this tundra and just see this place, because the views are just incredible.
It is. You're in the heart of the Amphitheater Mountains in the Alaska Range, and the views are incredible, and the variety of things to do in the area is also.
Just an amazing number of things to do. And let's just like give a little overview. So biking the highway is pretty popular. There's not that much traffic, and it's a great biking route. We're going to talk about that more in the second half. Hiking, many different choices of where you can hike. I know you guys as a BLM kind of take the responsibility for letting people know what to do out there. Let's go through some of the things that folks can do if they're planning a Denali highway trip.
Well, we have a number of hiking trails. We have the Swede Mountain Trail that's at milepost 19 on the Denali Highway.
And just sorry to interrupt you, but where do the mileposts start? From which end?
The Paxson side. It starts on the Paxson side, and
right,
our Tangle Lakes campground is milepost 20.
Okay, I got you.
So it starts on the east end,
mm-hmm,
and then runs to the Cantwell side.
I see. Okay.
So and our Tangle Lakes campground is at milepost 21 on the Denali Highway.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a recently renovated campground, and the renovations were finished in 2013.
Okay.
And that has 45 sites and a number of walk-in sites,
uh-huh,
that are available. And from the campground, we have a hiking trail that was developed in 2010.
Okay. And the Tangle Lakes are just a gorgeous area for canoeing, and I believe there's even a canoe rental operation near there, right?
Yes, there is one local lodge that does offer that, and the Tangle Lakes offer a variety of different type of boating experiences. And one of the unique things is the accessibility from the Denali Highway. There are several different type of boating trips that can be done, originating from Tangle Lakes or the Delta Wayside.
Mm-hmm. And to describe terrain looks like out there, as you drive up the Richardson Highway, and just to orient people, so the Richardson Highway is a highway that runs essentially from Glen Allen to Delta Junction. It was the original route that people took to get into Alaska from Valdez to Fairbanks before the other highways were built. Not too much used anymore, really. Pretty quiet highway. And the Denali Highway runs from sort of the midpoint on the Richardson in the town of Paxson, which is, you hardly even call a town. I mean, there's hardly anything there, across to the Parks Highway near Cantwell, which is just a little bit south of Denali National Park. So that's just sort of orienting. And as you get up there into the Alaska Range on the Richardson Highway, you get these amazing vistas where you are above tree line and you have all these lakes. Is that kind of what it's like in the Tangle Lakes area, just the tundra and the lakes and everything?
It is. You got sparse trees. You've got esker ridges that are very hikeable. Good vast views, and that's one of the unique aspects of that area is the view shed and the lake systems.
So what's the canoeing like there? Lake canoeing is you know, it's sort of lake canoeing, I think, is for everyone. You know, you're not, you don't have to know how to deal with currents. You obviously do have to know how to deal with cold water and without, you know, wearing PFDs. That's obvious. But what's the canoeing like? I mean, how much mileage of lakes is there to cover there?
Well, the river classification is broken up, you know, into two segments. We have the upper tangles, which is primary lake canoeing with about a mile portage or a quarter mile portage separating the lakes. But to get to the first portage, it's probably about 5 miles from the boat launch there, the Delta Wayside.
Wow, and that's great.
And the Delta Wayside is just adjacent from our Tangle Lakes campground on the opposite side of the highway. So the highway kind of divides the two systems. And the Tangle River flows in between them.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. And then this is also a pretty popular place to start a float trip, a longer float trip for maybe people who are not just beginning canoeists, but who have a little bit of river floating experience.
Right. You know, a lot of people utilize the upper tangles just for primarily lake canoeing and doing canoe loops in that area. And then the Delta River and the lower tangles, you know, you can stay on the lakes, but you can also choose to float the river. And the river segment leaving from the Tangle Lakes campground is approximately 30 miles. The first 8 is lake canoeing. And then you get to the Delta Portage, which is actually a double portage separated by a small lake. And then from there, you get into Class 2 rapids pretty quick. You need to be very well prepared and, you know, an experienced boater.
Mm-hmm.
Most people choose canoes, but people are beginning to take pack rafts and inflatables as well.
Right, and on the 5-point classification system, Class 2 is not too gnarly. I mean, it would be if you've got some experience, it's probably not too scary to attempt that. Where do you end up when you float that section?
You end at mile post 212 on the Richardson,
mm-hmm.
and it's an undeveloped take out there. But one of the unique things about the river trip is you're getting a little bit of everything. You're getting the lakes in the beginning, the river, and then as you move into the last segment, you're getting as Eureka Creek and glacial pours into the Delta River, and water gets more difficult to read, and water levels do fluctuate depending on the weather. So you're getting a little bit of everything.
So how much time would you allow for that float trip if you were going to do it in a leisurely way?
A typical trip is 2 nights and 3 full days.
Mm-hmm. And you'd need to pre-position a vehicle at the takeout, obviously.
Right, and there are local providers that that do shuttles.
Okay. Well, we should we'll get a list of some of those providers for rental and shuttle up on our website.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're interested, just go to alaskapublic.org, click on today's show, Denali Highway, and you'll find some of those planning tools if you want to take a trip to the Denali Highway this summer, which I obviously strongly recommend. And you, I'm sure you have a lot of stuff on your side as well, right? I mean, sort of planning stuff where people can learn about the area?
Oh, absolutely. Please do visit our website. If you just Google BLM Glen Allen Field Office, will pop up there, and there's a lot of information that will help you plan a trip.
Mm-hmm. What's the fishing like?
The fishing, it's a great grayling fishery. That's primarily what people are fishing for. Most of the fishing takes place either at the Delta Wayside or the Tango Lakes campground. But if you do venture off in a boat, there's still other opportunities on the lake system or at the start of the river.
So anything that we should warn people about in terms of you know, hazards. And I know that one thing is, you know, is the road unpaved at that end? It's partially paved, right?
It is. The road is paved to about mile 21.
Okay.
And then the paving ends. But as far as hazards, and if the focus is generally on the Denali Highway, you know, spare tire, be prepared to change a tire and be ready for that. As far as the...
There's not much out there. It's a remote highway, and you kind of need to be self-sufficient and take along what you need.
Right, yeah. And you know, Paxton used to be more of a functional lodge, and it has been intermittently open and closed the past several years, so you can't really rely on that. If you did need to tow, it would probably come out of Glen Allen or Delta Junction on our side, and then farther on the west side, it would come out of Cantwell.
Right, and those are big distances, so mm-hmm. you're going to pay a lot if you have to do that. Is there a cell coverage up there?
There is cell coverage around, you know, mile 20, and then it is intermittent until you get closer to Cantwell.
All right. Well, let's continue. We're talking today about the Denali Highway, and it's just a great way to get out into the sort of the best of Alaska and do it in a very casual way. You don't need a permit. Mm-hmm. You don't need to sort of make all tons of arrangements like you do if you're going to the park, and there's a lot of beautiful stuff to do out there. Mm-hmm. And we're talking right now with Denton Hamby, who is a outdoor recreation planner with the Bureau of Land Management in Glen Allen. So, Denton, we're sort of doing a little bit of a milepost tour here, and we got as far as mile 21, Tangle Lakes, and talked about that. Let's continue going down the highway. What do we come to next?
Well, we do have several facilities. We have the Clearwater Wayside that...
Clearwater Creek. And then you sort of go along, and there's sort of like waysides, vistas, places to get off the beaten track all along there, right?
Sure. And Clearwater is at milepost 55.5 from the Paxson.
Okay. Yeah, so about half an hour maybe beyond Tangle Lakes. How fast can you drive on the road safely on those on that unpaved portion? If people are planning how much time they need to do the Denali Highway, what kind of speeds should you plan on?
I mean, safe speeds, you know, and if you're really wanting to view wildlife, I would recommend slowing it down. So I'd say 40. The road does get graded and maintained by the state annually, but as the season goes on and with vehicle traffic, you know, it does get potholy, but I'd recommend 40 to 45.
Yeah, and the total length of the road is how many miles?
The total length of the road is about 147 miles.
Yeah, so you want to make you really 4 hours, and not counting like extensive stops. You really want to take some time. It's not something you want to zip up there and do super fast. That would kind
right.
of defeat the purpose.
And then, you know, just going back at milepost approximately 47, there's McLaren Lodge, where the McLaren River comes in.
Right.
And there's some good vistas and views as well.
Mm-hmm.
And traveling on into the Clearwater Creek area, where we have the Clearwater Wayside, the BLM does maintain outhouse and a picnic table there.
Mm-hmm.
And all along the highway, there is, you know, undeveloped, you know, hiking opportunities, you know, depending on what a person would like to do and how far they want to go.
Yeah, that's part of the fun part about it, in that being in that country, is you don't have to have a real detailed plan. You can just stop at an appealing place and explore,
mm-hmm.
which is really different for people who are used to trail hiking only, that you can kind of go where you want.
Right, and many of the trails there are, of course, multiple use. You know, they get used in the fall typically by hunters, so they're established by ATVs and such, but they're very hikeable through the summer as well.
Yeah. All right, Denton, I want to continue on and talk to your colleague there about the archaeology of the Tangle Lakes District, so we're going to let you go. But I want to thank you, Denton Hamby, for being with us with the Bureau of Land Management in Glen Allen. He's an outdoor recreation planner. And stay tuned as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 9 o'clock on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
We're back. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and today we're talking about the Denali Highway. Denali Highway is that very rural route, mostly unpaved, that runs from kind of the midpoint of the Glen Highway to the midpoint on the Parks Highway, roughly speaking, between Cantwell and Paxson. Paxson is a kind of a town, not much there on the eastern end of the highway, and Glen Allen and Cantwell is on the western end. And our next guest is John Jangla, who is an archaeologist with the Bureau of Land Management based in Glen Allen. And the reason we have an archaeologist with us is that the Tangle Lakes Archaeological District is a really significant place. We've talked in the earlier interview about the canoeing and hiking out there, but it's also really important scientifically and culturally. So thanks for being with us, John.
Yeah, not a problem.
So why is this an important area? Give us the overview of why Tangle Lakes matters from a cultural point of view.
Well, it matters because some of the oldest archaeology in the state of Alaska, south of the Alaska Range. So to give you some kind of historic background, just in terms of the research that was done out there, research has been done since about the 1960s. And some of that early research indicated that that area was probably one of the best areas to locate early human sites in Alaska. And since then, we found some older sites just to the north in the north of the Alaska Range. But the sites in the Tangle Lake still are around 11,900 years old at the oldest.
Wow. That's not too long after humans even showed up on this continent, right? I mean, it's pretty close to the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. It's some of the earliest dates for North America. And this would have been one of those areas that people would have traveled through on a land bridge between Siberia and North America.
Hmm. So what kind of artifacts have been located there over the years?
Well, just because some of these sites are so old, there's very poor preservation for, like, organic artifacts, so like your bone and wood. So most of it's stone tool fragments and manufacturing debris for stone tools. In fact, the area contains a couple of bedrock material sources for ancient tool stone.
Oh, wow. So what made it so appealing or valuable for these ancient people? Is it because it's a good transportation route, just like it is for us, to get through the Alaska Range?
Yeah, multiple reasons. So the fact that it was an area that was free of ice, it had a fairly reliable food source in the form of caribou migrating through the area in the spring and the fall. And then also the fact that it had tool stone plus other food resources like berries.
Okay, so the food resources were there, and it was a good route to get through. And so maybe as people were populating North America, they were traveling through here and hunting, and maybe staying for a while, and then moving on. I guess all that speculation, but that makes sense, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And archaeology, especially when you're working with just stone tools and very thin soils, we have very limited data that we can get from it. So that some of those questions that you just brought up, the fact that people were traveling through their toolkits, what the toolkits were made out of, whether it was some of the local, what we call argillite, which is the local tool stone, or some of the more exotic sources that we still haven't identified from probably fairly distant areas, indicate that people were traveling through and probably trading materials throughout Alaska.
So just like me with all the Leathermans that I've lost over the years while I'm camping, the ancient people were bringing these stone tools that they had maybe gotten from far, far away, and maybe losing them, or maybe just they lost, were no longer sharp, or lost utility, and they left them behind.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, some of the stuff was curated for long distances because it was, fairly valuable resources that they could resharpen. But you can only resharpen it so long before you end up with a very small point that has to be discarded and replaced with something else, or since they were using what we call atlatlan dart, which is a form of a spear thrower, that puts a lot of energy into a into a dart and into the projectile point when it hits. So if it hits anything other than a caribou, it would probably break. So they'd have to replace it then.
So is this a migratory route for a caribou? I mean, that would be another good reason for indigenous people to be there, I suppose. And is it, you know, if it's a migratory route now, it would have been in the past as well, right?
Yeah, in fact, more so. Back about the time that we have the earliest dates in the Tangle Lakes, just to the south of the Alphabet Hills, which is just on the very southern edge of the Tangle Lakes, would have been a Pleistocene or an early Lake Otna. So it basically would have filled the entire Copper River Basin. So caribou moving through would have been limited by the fact that they had this gigantic lake to the south, and then there was still some glacial ice masses in the Alaska Range and the Amphitheater Mountains. So it would have squeezed those caribou between those two points, which basically means they'd have to travel through the Tangle Lakes.
Interesting. You know, it's such an interesting place in the way it looks, in that you've got all this tundra, you've got these very long vistas, and then these silvery lakes that are in the in all the dips. And so I guess in the past, when there was a different climate and different amounts of ice, there would have been bigger lakes in some places. And as you're saying, ice would have come down further and sort of pinched the passes. And you can sort of reconstruct all that just by the many studies that have gone out there, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, one of the big parts of archaeology is actually analysis of the landforms. So there's some very old landscape out there. A lot of what people are seeing is the leftover remnants of glacial ice masses leaving behind their rock. So those Esker ridges are what's left of glacial streams that were underneath the glaciers. And then some of the lakes you talk about, one of them is an ancient Tangle Lake, which would have been contemporary with some of the oldest use in the archaeological district, was actually higher than the current lake levels. So right where the highway crosses the Tangle River in the vicinity of the Tangle Lakes campground would have been a large Esker Ridge Dam, which would have dammed up that lake. And it was about 16 meters higher than current lake levels. And that itself would have been a significant barrier for caribou. In fact, that's one of the reasons why we think there's so much old archaeology around the lakes, is the fact that lake was enough of a barrier that it was easier to hunt caribou as they were slowed crossing the ancient Tangle Lake.
Oh, interesting. So from the point of view of visitors who might be going up cycling or camping or canoeing, I mean, obviously, number one is we don't want to damage the archaeological resources. So do you have any sort of guidance as to how you avoid damaging what's there and what sort of rules people should follow?
Basically, staying on trails, mainly for motorized vehicles. For foot traffic and for bicyclists, well, bicyclists should also stay on trails, but for foot traffic, we don't really have any limitations. What we ask is that if you are on foot and you do find archaeological sites, which is a very high likelihood given the number of sites that are around the Delta River corridor, is that you appreciate it in its place and leave it behind for other users.
So if you're paying attention and walking around out there, you're probably going to find stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's really neat. So do you guys want people to turn in reports when they find sites or when they find archaeological resources and sort of take a picture and get a GPS location? Are you still gathering sites? Because I guess this is like one of the most densely studied areas and with more sites than anywhere else around, right?
Yeah, it is. One of the pieces of guidance I give to folks is that if it's fairly close to the highway and well-used trails, we've probably found the sites. But if you're canoeing and you're very far from both the highway and trails, if you could take a picture and GPS it and then let us know, let our front office know, and they can get the information to me.
Oh, neat. And we have your website up on our site at alaskapublic.org. Just scroll down and click on Denali Highway. And You can find out about the archaeological resources there at Tangle Lakes and also all the other stuff you need to know to plan a trip out there. Well, this is really interesting. I really appreciate your time, John. It's fascinating, and I'm kind of envious of you having the job of working with these resources in such a beautiful spot.
Yeah, exactly. I've enjoyed my job for 15 years working out here, so it definitely keeps me here.
All right. And you guys have a visitor center there in Glen Ellen for folks who want to stop in and talk to somebody, right?
We have our front office. Mm-hmm. So we do have some displays in the front office, and our front office staff are great about answering questions.
All right. Well, thank you. John Jangala, he's a BLM archaeologist out in Glen Ellen, talking about the Tangle Lakes Archaeological District. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about cycling the highway and get some of that information for hopefully getting you interested in going out and seeing this beautiful part of the state. Stick with us. We'll be right back after this version of what you can expect to see on the Denali Highway by our own producer, Monica Gokey.
So, you're thinking about doing the Denali Highway. Whether you're gas-powered or leg-powered, here's an audio guidebook of what you can expect to see along the way. Let's start by going west to east, left to right on a map, Cantwell to Paxson. You're going to dip off the park's highway at mile marker 210 out of Anchorage. It's about 20 miles south of the entrance to Denali National Park. The town is called Cantwell. It's actually about 2 miles west of the Denali Highway Junction. Take a break, stop, breathe, and look around. This is your last chance for a hot meal for, 90 miles or so. We all know that a hot meal tastes better when someone else makes it, so fill up while you can. Headed out of Cantwell, you're in for a whopping 2.5 miles of pavement before the road surface switches to gravel. Put your head game into four-wheel drive. Not long after leaving Cantwell, you can see Denali and the Talkeetna Mountains on a clear day off to the south. In another 20 miles, the Alaska Range comes into view. Look for the Alaska Range after you've spotted the Nanana River. Scenery, check. The Nanana also forms the eastern boundary of Denali National Park. It's a whitewater rafting destination with class 3 to 4 rapids to get your adrenaline going. But that's another trip for another time. Back to the Denali Highway. As you roll past the Nanana, be on the lookout for caribou and moose. If you're here in the fall, you also might want to be wearing orange. This part of the highway is characterized by several informal primitive camping spots. The first maintained campground is about 30 miles in at Brishkana Creek. 50 miles in, Gracious House Lodge is off to your right. It's a true Alaskan lodge. Owners Butch and Carol offer gas, snacks, a bar, lodging, flight service, guide service, snow machining, and camping. They also do repairs, welding, and towing, too. Worth the stop. About 5 miles after Gracious House Lodge, you cross the Susitna. It is a big river. Expect to see boats here in the summer. Downstream is a section called Devil's Canyon of the Susitna, which only gets run a handful of times a year by expert whitewater kayakers. Around mile marker 65, start looking for Alpine Creek Lodge, the self-dubbed best place in Alaska. But in all seriousness, the lodge is beautiful. It's a palace of logs capped with a green metal roof, something like you'd see in a children's book. Stop in for coffee. The lodge also offers the full gamut of guided activities. Back on the road, more informal camping and lots of wildlife characterize the next 20 to 30 miles before you stumble across the McLaren River Lodge around mile 90. Denali Highway Tours and Cabins is also in the same neck of the woods. Expect to find comfortable lodging, hot food, and homey feel at the McLaren River Lodge. Denali Highway Tours and Cabins is a bona fide Iditarod kennel, owned and operated by the Schandelmeyer family. They do tours by reservations only, but also offer cabins for rent, showers, laundry, and a small gift shop. A hop and a skip up the road is the McLaren River Bridge. You can't miss it. You're about two-thirds of the way through your trip on the Denali Highway by now. Gosh, time flies, doesn't it? At mile markers 97, 103, and 109, there are some off-road vehicle trails for further access to the backcountry. Worth the wander if you have the time. By now, you're entering the Tangle Lakes Recreation Area. Like the name implies, Tangle Lakes is a series of long, narrow lakes connected by the Tangle River. It's a popular canoe trail, and you can even rent canoes at the Tangle River Inn at mile marker 114 if you have time for it. Plan on taking 2 to 3 days to do the full trail, and you'll need to organize a shuttle to pick you up on the Richardson Highway where it lets out. Back on the highway, this whole area is spectacular for berry picking and wildlife, especially birds. It's also the stomping grounds for the Nalchina caribou herd. By now, our audio trip across the Denali Highway is almost over. After you pass the Tangle Lakes boat launch, it's not long before the road switches back to pavement, which you might rejoice about if you're biking this stretch. But the fun isn't over yet. There are a number of small lakes in this stretch that are worth breaking out a fishing pole for if you have one. This area is also a jewel for archaeologists. People have been hunting and gathering here for more than 10,000 years, which is truly amazing. And as you head into Paxson, 135 miles after leaving Cantwell, you'll start to see the familiar signs of civilization. Lodges, gas, more pavement, a bigger highway. All the things that bring on the familiar hangover of coming back down to planet Earth after some blissful time in the wild. I'm Monica Goki.
Listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 9 o'clock on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Back, Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth, and today we're talking about the Denali Highway, which is this, not Denali National Park, this is to the east of the park, still in the Alaska Range, country that some people say is even more spectacular than the park, just gorgeous, gorgeous alpine country that has a gravel road running through it, and the road runs from, well, depending on where you start, runs from the Glen Highway to the Parks Highway between the communities of Paxson and Cantwell. There's not a heck of a lot of reason for the road to be there anymore, except as a route to some amazing recreation opportunities. And because it doesn't have much traffic and because it's such a gorgeous place, it's become a pretty popular place for cycling and for some real Alaska wilderness cycling adventures. And for this second half of the show, I've got two experts on that subject, guys who just love to be on their bikes and have spent a lot of time biking the Denali Highway to get you excited about going out to do it and give you some tips on how to do it and what you need to know. And in the studio is Avraham Zaria, who's an adventure cyclist and has ridden the highway a bunch of times. Thanks for being with us, Av.
Hey, good morning.
And Carlos Lozano, he organizes the Denali Classic, which is a bike race. And I asked him, what he does. He says, I just ride my bike. He's retired, and so he just loves being out there on his bike. Thanks for being with us, Carlos.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
So what's so special about the Denali Highway from your point of view in terms of cycling?
The scenery is spectacular. It's world class, and to experience on a bike, you know, whether you want to go fast or slow, it's an amazing experience. It's one that you probably won't forget if it's your first time, and if you're doing it for your second and third time, you're doing it for a reason, and that's because it's grander. It's amazing Alaska scenery. It's amazing.
And wildlife, and you just see, when you're on a bike, you actually see it 10 times more than you do in a car.
Oh yes, when you ride a bike or walking the road, you got the smells. You're very intimate with your environment out there. You're just a couple feet off the road, and you see porcupines, ptarmigan. You're very close to caribou and swans, and every now and then a moose. You just can't beat that.
Yeah, yeah. So how many times do you think you've ridden the highway?
Over the years, probably about 15 times.
15 times, okay. Mm-hmm. So you probably know every twist and turn out there.
Well, it was as time goes by, you know, we all get faster and and whatnot. Yeah, I know quite a bit about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want to talk about your race and get some of your tips about what you do out there. But I also want to bring in my other guest. Same question, Av. Why do you like cycling the Denali Highway?
Well, cycling anywhere in Alaska is excellent, but when you can turn and head onto this beautiful gravel road, especially early in the season, there's no washboards. It's been graded lovingly by DOT. You can see the little fire circles that they have created, and you can just imagine that they put in a lot of effort getting it prepared for the summer. Just to go out there and see those mountains rise on either side of you, and then be there when caribou jump out and try to trick you. The mom runs forward, and the baby darts off to the left, and the mom says, "Follow me," and she darts off to the right. You know she's going to circle around and get her kid. It's just great. You go for miles and miles. There's water everywhere.
There's no glass between you and the caribou.
Yeah, that's right. There's no... I mean, as long as it's not a bear chasing you or a wolf slowly trotting behind you,
have you had that
pretty
happen?
Good. That happens sometimes. And he knows stories where guys have been coming back late at night and they hear breaks in the brush and there's a big Bruin trailing him while he's trying to pump up the hill.
I'd rather be on a bike than on foot anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Carlos, have you had any of those encounters, slightly scary wildlife encounters out there?
Well, not necessarily as close proximity as that one was, but I've had... the grizz out there maybe 100 yards or so, wondering if they like to have a meal on wheels, so to speak. But.
It's the ptarmigan that wait, and you're going along in silence, and all of a sudden, right behind you, they break and shoot out of the brush, you know, screaming. Then that's enough to...
Freaks you out, yeah.
Yeah, it does. You're like, what the heck?
You know, it just strikes me as we talk about this, that this is a totally unique experience, like anywhere, that you can pretty easily get on to a road where you're cycling and you've got all your camping gear and you're, comfy, and yet you are really way out there in the wilderness.
Yeah, and the nice thing about technology we were mentioning earlier, traditionally people think of bike touring as a rack, a pair of Ortlieb bags, and you're going down on the side of the road and cars are whipping by, and not everyone's excited by that. But with today's technology of the seat post bag, the frame bag, and a sweet roll, anyone with a mountain bike or any kind of bike can actually get some lightweight gear and go off and camp on the gravel and take bike paths anywhere, Resurrection, Denali,
right,
and not have to carry much and have a water pump, have their food, whatever they need, they can just do it. So
it's
technology
an incredible
is really
level of independence, and
because of the technology.
And the thing that I don't like about backpacking is carrying the backpack and getting a sore back, right? And well, on a bike, you don't have to worry about that. You might get a sore rear end, but not a.
In camping, they say it's the big three: you have your bags, your shelter, and your sleeping situation. So with a bike, you can get these great bags, and the shelters can weigh 2 pounds. You can have a very nice tent. Big Agnes and other makers give you great choices. You don't have to just crawl in a bivy sack anymore. You can have a super light. For instance, they're moving away from mummy bags into these quilted bags with no zipper and no hoods. So a nice, comfy sleeping environment can weigh 1 pound, 3 ounces, like the size of a grapefruit. And you can just shove it in a seat post bag, and you don't have to suffer when you're sleeping.
So what kind of camping spots do you guys use out there?
Well, it varies, you know, along that road. You have two... available on a Cantwell, and at mile 31 you have the BLM Brushkana campground. Then at the opposite, on the east end, you have the
Clear Lakes or 55.
Yeah, and those mileposts are counting from the east, so from starting from Paxton.
Yeah, you have the Tangle Lakes campground.
Oh, yeah. These are official campgrounds.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But all along the road there's from the hunters being there in the fall and from use through the years of them doing that, you have pretty good spots to put up a tent or whatever you have there and just spend a night or for as long as you want. And most of them are really, really visually, the scenery is, once again, it's enormous.
Yeah.
It's really big.
Yeah, well, and that's why the wildlife viewing is so good. It's not just, I mean, there's a lot of wildlife there, but probably in the alpine, there may be more wildlife lower down, but because there's no trees, you can see forever, so you can really see everything that's out there.
Well, along those lines that the elevation we're at, we're right at tree line around 2,800 feet, skirting 3,000 on many occasions along that road, and the opportunity to look down while you're biking or if you want to camp or just stopping to have a snack, the opportunity to see all kinds of animals down in these little draws and valleys is huge.
Yeah.
I remember the hardest part of biking it for me last year was the pavement part. When just before going into Paxson, up there at Tangle Lakes, that area, you could just imagine prehistoric man hunting because the wind whips through that area. And if you are upwind from the caribou, they can't hear you, and you can sneak up on them and take care of business. And because it's the wind, it just scrubs everything. It's like a kill box. And that's what I think why it's been so popular for you were talking earlier.
Yeah, John Jingle,
It's really very elemental, and there's no better way. If you're in a car, you don't get that feeling like you do on a bike.
Right. But it strikes me also that a unique thing about this country is that the tundra is, on the whole, is dry, you know. So a lot of places where you might be driving a rural highway and you look out and say, oh, wow, let's hike on the tundra. You get out and your foot sinks into the mud, right?
Yeah.
But up here, it's dry tundra, which is the best hiking territory anyways. So you can, if you see a spot you're interested in, you just pull off and hike, right?
Yeah, I noticed that besides the basic campgrounds, as I would pedal along, I would see these choice setups with tents and people that had come to locations that they had handpicked for the view for their own personal reasons. And you get that kind of boutique feeling that you can actually camp where you want to.
Yeah, you don't need a permit. Just go out there.
It's beautiful.
So, Carlos, go ahead.
You know, one of the experiences I enjoyed out there when I'm camping or just hanging out, whatever I'm doing at that particular time, is the vastness of the silence that's out there at night, you know, compared to what we have in here in Anchorage. You're out there in the middle of the night, you know, almost daylight even, but just the silence. Mm-hmm. No sound. You hear a bird every now and then, but the silence is marvelous.
And there's not much traffic. I mean, very few cars. Right. Yeah.
Now, to juxtaposed against that is the warmth of human companionship when you encounter it.
Right.
So you've been 10 hours on the road, and you cruise into McLaren Lodge, and the guy's in there ready to make you a hot bowl of soup and some fresh cooked bread late at night.
And you really appreciate it.
Yeah. Fire up the Toyo stove, open up Whitey's cabin. You can sleep there for $25. It's frosty outside. So it's really nice. There's a couple of great lodges. They don't crowd the place, but you're happy that they're there. So you don't want people to think that you're just out in the middle of absolutely nowhere.
Right. Right.
It is, because this was originally the path at the Mount McKinley.
Before the Parks Highway was built. Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's nicely banked. It's a very safe, when you're going around the corners, even on the gravel, as long as you don't go too fast and wash out at the bottom, it is a safe, nicely laid out road for riders.
It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about the Denali Highway in this half of the show, talking about cycling out there. It is just a sort of a world-class experience, has been mentioned by my guest, Carlos Lozano, who is an avid cyclist and organizes the Denali Classic, and Av Zaria, who's an adventure cyclist and spent a lot of time out there camping. Let's do some of the practical stuff. Mosquitoes, bugs can be really bad, and when you're cycling along, you know, they probably won't bug you, but you're going to stop now and then and set up camp. What time of year do you guys feel is best for that, and how do you deal with it, Carlos?
Well, that's, you know, mosquitoes are very hardy, like most Alaskans. I think maybe most Alaskans take after the mosquitoes. But anytime you get above 32 degrees and when mosquitoes can survive, you know, they're going to be out, and then you got the black flies and no-see-ums and whatnot. They're going to be a problem. And one way I cope with that is I don't wear any dark clothing. I avoid black hats, dark colored hats, jackets, T-shirts. I try to stay, excuse the pun, as white as possible. Mm-hmm. And that reduces the attraction that mosquitoes seem to have, for me anyway, when I wear dark clothes. And then, of course, yeah, bug nets and stuff like that.
I really believe in the bug shirts with the hoods. They really make your life so much happier when you're out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to a fellow, and he changed his sleeping situation from one bivy sack to another because he could not, you know, basically endure late at night in some places when you pull over to camp. If you don't have a place to get in out of the bugs.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're messed up. So they have the hoods. And you put your hoods on, but if you pick your shelter correctly, you can just watch them bounce off the net, and and you're going to enjoy yourself. Basically, you're going to want to wear a capelline or some kind of longer thing so that there's no exposed flesh.
Right.
And depending on your philosophy, there's a couple of different sprays or rubs that you can put on. Mm-hmm.
And if you're worried about black flies, you have to use the high DEET level. The low DEET level stuff won't work.
The good news is that if you go just before or on Memorial Day, it's the air is crisp. And when I was coming around last year, there was no bugs until we got down to Glen Allen. Mm-hmm. So up there, McLaren Pass is 4,000 feet, and a lot of it is 2,800. You're at a good high elevation. It's crisp, and there was no bugs actually on the Denali Highway for
me last
year.
What about dust? I mean, do you spend a lot of time eating dust out there?
It all depends on the environment out there as far as did we get rain the day before or during the ride and stuff like that. And the rain is basically not a problem. It's just poor gear choices. So if you have the proper gear and perhaps some fenders for your bike, rain is not a problem.
Mm-hmm. That brings to a point Carlos and I were talking about how to describe distances or times that riders can expect. And in his endurance, he doesn't want to talk about it, but he'll post on the internet, people who do this race, this classic, have to be experienced outdoors people who know how to take care of themselves. And that's a given out there because it's beautiful, but it's not Yosemite or it's not...
there's not a ranger around the tree who's going to come take care of you.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have to know how to take care of your gear, and you have to know that what you think is a three-hour jaunt could be 10 hours because of the headwinds.
I wanted to talk about that in terms of the elevation changes. I mean, how much time... you guys are obviously really avid cyclists. I mean, how much time would you allow for somebody who's maybe not real hardcore to do the highway? And would you do it over and back, or would you pre-position a car, Carlos?
Well, you know, you can do that a couple of different ways. For example, if you've been a couch potato for most of the winter time and sipping your 12-ouncers, long neckers and whatnot, and gorging on pizza, you might want to have a buddy that can wait for you 20 miles down the road in a car, and you can ride up to him. And
supported, yeah.
Yeah, supported that way, or just go out and do it solo.
Or put together some friends, you know, that's something, you know, and straight off as who does the driving, and then you're supported, and you can take, you know, unlimited gear, and I know people enjoy doing that.
Yeah, that happens frequently on the Denali Highway. You see groups of two or four or three. And,
or maybe even bring an RV.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to worry about the bugs.
Yeah. The idea is you need to have a backup system in case things go sideways, that a buddy can come get you. You could have a catastrophic failure. Your rims could buckle.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to have someone in the world that cares.
Right.
That's what he says. He's not going to go get you if you're out there. You better have some friends.
Well, you guys will need to listen to the show we did 2 weeks ago with these French cyclists who took off from France and are biking around the world, came through Anchorage, and they just they don't even take a phone. They're just like biking across Mongolia without any support. So there's levels of extreme, but I'm not suggesting people do that, but different people have different approaches.
Well certainly there are people in this world that are really capable of doing that. And most of the people that are participating in the events that I put on.
Yeah, let's talk about your event. What is it exactly, the classic?
Well, the Denali Classic, over the years have evolved to, you know, different choices I can have the riders choose from. But it's usually an out and back from one particular area. And for, I'm going to use a generic term this year instead of naming a year. We're starting out of a lodge there associated with McLaren River, McLaren River Lodge. And one choice is you ride up to Alpine Creek Lodge and come back. The other opportunity is you ride to the Susitna River Bridge, turn around and come back. And then in the longest, the hero distance, is when you ride to the Bruskana River Bridge and turn around and come back, out and back.
How many miles is that?
Well, you have 126, 125, and then 52, mm-hmm. and then 75. Mm-hmm. And usually with my events that I put on out there, we have a family-oriented type of atmosphere, and the families get together after the racer take off, and they just go ride wherever they want to and have a good time and come back, and usually that evening we'll have a potluck barbecue and all the trimmings. And one guy told me that I was thinking of not doing it, you know, and he says, "Oh man, you got to do it. You know, it's just like a family reunion.
Yeah, yeah.
Do it. Don't stop doing it."
So it's all over this year, but if people want to find out for next year, where do they get the information?
Facebook play, and I have a page called Alaska Endurance Association,
right.
And everything's
there. And we'll have that linked on our website. Just go to alaskapublic.org and look at Denali Highway, and there'll be a link to the Denali Classic. It's organized by my guest, Carl Lozano, and Av Zaria is also here with me. What kind of bikes do you guys use on those gravel roads? I mean, you're not going to be using like a carbon fiber narrow
Listen,
tire.
Aristotle asked this. This is an ancient question. I remember when I was on it last year with I had a Sutra by Kona disc brake touring bike with 35s, big wheels, 35s, and I said, you know what this ride needs, or this trail needs? 2 inches. I need 2-inch tires. My tires are too skinny.
Mm-hmm.
But then I know we're getting ready to do this ride. A lot of people are going to go out there with fast cross bikes and just tear it up. But they're going to have to be beat up with their wrists and their and there's a chance to spill.
Yeah.
I think that
if you're somebody who just wants to do it as a touring thing, they want to get off and do some hiking and look around. I would think that a suspension mountain bike with nice wide tires is going to make you a lot more comfortable.
You will be happy with a mountain bike. It doesn't have to be full suspension. You don't actually need even front suspension, but those nice tires will make you more comfortable. The thing is it's even if it's perfectly graded, there's many potholes, lots of them, that can just jar you. And if you're out there 6 to 10 hours looking for the golden camp spot, you'll be exhausted if you've had to fight your way through all of
that.
It's nice. Fat tires, maybe some shocks.
Carlos,
but then you got to go up the hills.
What do you ride?
I have my choice of different tools I can jump on and head down the road. My preference is a 700C vehicle, and it's a cyclocross bike. But I have some
fairly... He's aggressive.
But I have a fairly large tire on it right now, and it's like a 40C. I don't want to get into gear speak, but it's a large tire for that type of bike. And... it's not the largest, but it is a large tire. But the key point is, you know, frame materials of your bike, how compliant it is, and that combined with a decent fork. And tires that are flexible, the sidewalls can give you some cushion, some suspension characteristic, but most people probably won't feel it because they're enjoying the scenery so much.
Right.
But it's not really about the bike. It's about what's between the ears and what you're willing to persevere to enjoy such a fabulous place.
Yeah, so big climbs, you could run into some wind, you know, it's not always going to be easy. So what about getting off the road? Make sense, and are there good spots to cycle off of the road into trails, or is it too rugged, or have you guys done that?
Well, the nice thing about the Denali is it is the trail in a sense. So you're whipping along, and you know, the wind's in your hair, and yet you see trails to the side, But if you have many miles to go, you're probably going to just whip by and take a note. Maybe I'll come back. Uh-huh. But if you're car camping with bikes, and some people can do that, and you stop and set up at Clear Lake or Brush Canada, then you can go just explore as long as you have your GPS or you don't get lost. And it's easy to remember, oh, the mountains are this way, the sun's setting this way, and hopefully you won't get lost. But I haven't personally been off of the road onto these trails.
Yeah. Carlos?
There are many opportunities to take offshoots off. They're off the Denali Trail, Denali Road, in that most of these trails are really recognizable, and that especially on the west end and on the north side, it looks like a Jeep trail. And
a lot of hunters are out there on ATVs in the fall, so I mean, the places you can explore.
Oh, yes. I've camped out there and taken my bike. At that particular juncture in time, I was using a mountain bike. And you just go down these old trails and get down some of these valleys, and it's just amazing what you can see back there.
Yeah, why not get off the road if you're not in a rush, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And those that are doing the car camping biking scenario, mm-hmm. that's a perfect opportunity to explore these side roads.
Yeah.
They're not exactly roads. They're deep trails.
Yeah. The ATV trails.
Let's talk about water. That's an important thing. The technology that they have, we were talking the other day, you have SteriPens. I use this thing, a Katadyn filter, that filters glacial silt or anything at a liter a minute. And it's about the size of a pint glass. There's no mm-hmm. beer in it. But you can get your water anywhere off the side of the road, and that's something that can shut a...
plentiful, yeah.
It can shut a tour down if you're out there and all of a sudden you become parched, you're far away, and you don't have water, because you need a lot of water when you're riding.
Yeah, totally true, yeah.
Part of the pre-planning that goes into a tour such as this is the figuring out what your capabilities are and what you're willing to sustain.
Sure.
And physically wise and discomfort wise.
Doing it supported the first time might be a good idea. Yeah.
So, or with a buddy who's done it.
Yeah, or with a buddy. Yeah. But it's not, we don't need to scare people off. I mean, because there are going to be cars coming now and then, and it's not, it's not like you're not going to see a human face all day. I think it's a great adventure for folks. And I really want to thank you guys for coming in to talk about it.
Thank you.
I'm totally, I got to get out there. I do the show and now I want to do all this stuff. And I've driven it, but I've never cycled it. So that's definitely on my list now. And so thanks, Carlos Lozano. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
Carlos organizes the Denali Classic, and there'll be a link to his Facebook page on our website. And Av Zaria, an adventure cyclist, camper, has been out there many times. Thanks for being with us, Av.
Thank you.
That's all for today's show. Next week, we're talking about raising outdoorsy kids with some folks who have oriented their lives completely to their outdoor passions, and with children along for the ride. Thanks for joining us today on Outdoor Explorer. Our producer is Monica Gokey. Grace Bogine is our production assistant. And I'm your host, Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.